This is a tech tale of trials, triumphs, boom bust, and multi-million dollar misfortune. Enough to turn the blood cold in the veins of even the bravest entrepreneur. African born and bred, Gower Lentil has written his name as a tech entrepreneur from the continent's tech breeding ground of Cape Town to Sydney and London. He mucked out cows in Switzerland and pulled pints in London on his way to a tech fortune of $65 million. This is part one of two parts looking at the career of Lentil, an entrepreneur disrupting what's up in South Africa. In the 1980s, Gower Lentil was a nomadic farm labourer mucking out the cows in cold Switzerland, worrying how he was going to pay off his credit card debts. Less than 20 years later, he sat at the head of a negotiating table in New York, selling his first venture as an entrepreneur for a cool $65 million, wealth that was to evaporate before his eyes. What a life for Lentil. If he were a blues man in the Mississippi Delta, you would say he had mileage. Deep experience on the road, less travelled. Mileage, they say, makes a good blues man great. For Lentil's grey hairs are rare in the tech space, peopled by young Turks in Africa. They have seen a lot of life, success and adversity in more than 60 years. It all began with a flight from Zimbabwe, where he was born and bred and had been schooled at Churchill's Boys High in Harare, to London at the end of the 1970s. I arrived in London with a new rucksack, a new sleeping bag, all my possessions and £300. That's all my parents could afford, and foreign currency restrictions made it difficult anyway. And I made my way in life, he tells Billionaire Tomorrow from Cape Town, more than 40 years on. I had an uncle and his wife, and I stayed with them for 2 months. I tried to get into university and got offered a place, but that was at the time when Maggie Thatcher got into power and foreign student fees went through the roof, and we had no capacity to pay anything. Although I was a British citizen, I was not classified as a home student. I had to live there for 3 years and pay taxes. As a working taxpayer in London, he trained as an accountant, but realised after a year that this was not what he wanted to do with his life. He worked pulling pints in a pub in Portobello Road in London's Notting Hill and painting and decorating before he heard there was work on a farm in Switzerland. I was a farm labourer, cleaning up cow shit and chicken shit, throwing things around and feeding cows and working on the land. I was on the bottom rung. I was a labourer. I was working without a visa, so the farm people hid me away and didn't want me to go many places. I was paying off debts that I had, so I was happy to work, earn money, be fed and pay off my credit card. None of them spoke English, so I had to learn Swiss German, he says. I had a good 3 years of labouring and work, forever appreciate the lessons and life wisdoms I got from that. When I said to the people in Switzerland I wanted to leave and travel and thinking about going to university, they were astonished. They saw me as a farm labourer. Lentil flew back to study at Lancaster University, where he earned an honours degree in operational research, a management science degree with mathematics, statistics and computer science. It was computers that really got me interested. Following graduation, it was back to farm labouring for a few months, bringing in the harvest in Hertfordshire to pay off more debt. As the 1980s built up steam, Lentil got a job at Price Waterhouse Consulting. It was growing and everybody was doing MBAs and it was all happy days for the big consulting firms. Price Waterhouse helped Lentil emigrate to Sydney, Australia. In Sydney, he moved to Oracle Consulting, where he spent 4 years. Then along came the internet in the mid-90s and I decided that was really what I wanted to do. Oracle were talking about it, but not doing anything about it. So in 1996, I went to Aussie Mail, the first Australian tech stock ever to list on the NASDAQ. The chairman was Malcolm Turnbull, the future Prime Minister of Australia. He was an accomplished lawyer who defended former MI5 operative Peter Wright in his efforts to publish the book Spycatcher in 1987 in Australia, where it had been banned. Lentil says he learned a lot from Turnbull and from being in the heart of Australia's largest internet company. Even though the internet was still working on painfully slow dial-up connections, it was growing in power faster than a Sydney summer storm. In June 1998, We were riding into the peak of the dot-com boom, he recalls. It was a wonderful time to be around. It was amazing, actually. We started this ad-serving technology company, leveraging the experience we had at Aussie Mail, he says. The Sydney-based company was called Sabella Media. We were two men and a dog with $100,000 each invested in the business, he says. By January 2000, just a year and a half from its founding, the company was thriving with 50 staff in Australia, Canada, the US, London and Paris. We grew and got a third co-founder in, put some money in. We raised $2 million from a private family office in Japan and expanded to the US and UK. In late 1999, Sabella Media was about to carry out a venture capital round for $14 million. It was mad dot-com days. You could put a dot-com on anything. You could put dot-com on a teacup and you could get funding. It was a mad time, but it was a wonderful time. We were two men and a dog in a little serviced office in Sydney. And a year later or so, I was meeting bankers on Wall Street who were competing to raise money for us. I'd never been to New York or Wall Street, and it was bizarre in a way. It was wonderful. It was just such a huge experience in a short space of time. It opened my eyes to the world of business, banking, venture capital, growing businesses, traveling the world, doing this crazy dot-com stuff. Success had seen the corporate vultures circle overhead. At the turn of the century, digital giant DoubleClick, a company bought by Google for $3.1 billion in 2008, was looming large over the fortunes of Sabella Media. DoubleClick started off by suing Sabella Media for patent infringement. They sued us on a Friday and then met us in New York on a Monday and offered to acquire us. The patent lawsuit was to stop the VC round because then they wouldn't be able to get their hands on us. And it taught us a lesson about how business works in America, which I've always remembered. The DoubleClick guys were nice guys. We learned what it takes when you play football. On the football field in America, everyone plays within the rules, but people will run into you and smash you. There was no hard feelings or emotional resentment or whatever. It was just a tactic to achieve their objective to acquire us. At the 11th hour, this other company came in and we had to run two negotiations in parallel. And over the weekend, we closed the deal. DoubleClick was offering us $38 million, trying to squeeze us. We closed the deal over the weekend and told DoubleClick on Monday, sorry, we've sold the company. The other company came along and offered us $65 million, 95% of that in their stock and the rest in cash. Of course, in the middle of the dot-com boom, we were all sheep and we were all convinced the price of that stock was going to increase because that was what was happening in the dot-com world. The other company was 24/7 Media. The deal was covered by the New York Times. I flew back to Sydney after that deal in New York prior to the dot-com crash. Starting, I got up one morning and the value of my shares had increased by $1 million overnight. You know, you kind of get up in the morning, go and have a piss, look at the computer, you're worth $1 million more and make a cup of tea and carry on with life, he laughed. I bought myself a new car, a fancy Mercedes, which was one of the dumbest decisions I ever made. When I bought it, I didn't care what it cost, but that was a waste of money. The shiny waste of money Mercedes turned out to be a harbinger of doom. We all took all of the shares and, of course, the dot-com crash started happening in March and April 2000. During 2001, those shares declined 99%. Of course, we held on because everyone assumed it was going to go up two or three times in value. Then the tech wreck happened and the shares we were paid declined by 99%. So was Lentil left empty-handed? Pretty much, he says. We managed to get something out before that happened. The hardest thing is to sell shares when you thought, well, once worth this much and they're going to be double, then they're worth half and a third and 25%. There is a human psychology that hangs on. Then they're going to come back, but they just went down the toilet. I got a check for a few hundred thousand dollars as part of the 5% in cash. Through no fault of his own, Lentil saw a multi-million dollar fortune slipped through his fingers. It was a catastrophe that no one could have foreseen, that could have spelt the end for many a sturdy entrepreneur. Yet 20 years on, Lentil is taking up an even bigger challenge with a pile of risk, the disrupting of world giant WhatsApp. Watch out for his story in part 2.